18 years ago, before I became a parent, I didn't even know the questions to ask about how to parent. What is good parenting? What should be the goal of my parenting? I didn't know that things were going to hit me the way that they do. Kids fighting, kids wanting things to be fair, trying to provide consequences and appropriate consequences for behavior. Parenting is a very, very hard task. And I think the way we learn most about parenting is after we've been one.
Welcome to Christianity at Work, a radio ministry of Mackenzie Study Center. Our hosts are Dr. Jack Crabtree and Christine Barber. Jack is a teacher at Mackenzie Study Center and Gutenberg College in Eugene, Oregon. By training, Jack is a philosopher, but his real passion is the Bible, having studied and taught it for more than 25 years. Christine is a licensed marriage and family therapist, having practiced for over 20 years in California and Oregon. Along with her husband, Larry, she is employed by the Charis Foundation, a teaching and counseling ministry. In this series, titled Christianity at Work in Relationships, Jack and Christine discuss how God teaches us to trust Him through the experiences of everyday life. Here now are Jack and Christine.
So today we're starting our fourth program on parenting, and Jack is sitting here incredulous that here I am bringing up this subject again, because he thinks we don't have anything else to talk about. Ha! We've got a lot to talk about. I think it's very notable that one of the things that we have not talked about is how to discipline our children, what to do in particular situations. And as I mentioned, I believe in our program last week, it would be great to have call-in for this segment and have parents say, here's my particular issue, can you address this? And so I think because we don't have that, and because our children are kind of older, they're heading into their last years of high school and college for you, and I have a daughter that's in her last year of elementary, and then high school for me, we're not really addressing parenting needs of very small children, which is a whole unit in itself. But I don't feel real prepared to do that right now, although I think that it's a very important thing.
Yeah. I never have felt very prepared to do that.
I don't think I've ever felt very prepared to do that. We just got thrown into it and have to do it sometimes. So I often in my counseling have people say, you know, what do I do about a whiny child, or how do I discipline in this for this particular way? What do you think about spanking, or what do you think about timeouts? What do you think is the appropriate thing in terms of children having friends or from this particular group, or just lots of questions that parents have, and they're legitimate and important questions. I just want to say we're not doing that.
Right, and philosophically opposed to doing that, I would say for myself, because I don't think you can turn parenting into a set of rules and principles and techniques. It's much more mysterious and much more complicated than that.
We wouldn't be philosophically against answering particular questions and helping people look at their issues according to some principles that we've laid down. I do that very often with friends and with clients, but it's real tough to just say, here's a rule, and you just need to follow it all the time, as though it's going to work.
Right. I'd be more reluctant even to answer. I cringed when you said, I wish we had a call-in show here. I mean, my answer would be the same every time, and I don't know.
I wouldn't let you answer,
that's
Jack.
That's a really difficult problem. It beats me.
I don't know.
Because oftentimes in a situation, when people ask me that kind of question, I find they're so much closer to the situation than I am. They're in a better position to answer it than I am. They know their child better. And here I would be a stranger who doesn't know their child at all, trying to tell them how to raise their child. I think you've mentioned in the past how, in a way, we need to learn how to nurture our children as individuals. And the children in your different family, in your own family, you have to deal with differently because they're different people. And the way you would interact with one child may be really quite different than the way you'd interact with another child, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
So I could tell people what I do with my children. I mean, I've had people come to me and say, a child who's really not really motivated in school, and a parent coming in saying, how do I motivate them? And I had to say, boy, I don't have the foggiest idea. My children have always been self-motivated. I've never even had to try to motivate my children. So how do I know?
I'm glad that you said that, because you really don't know.
No.
My children, on the other hand, have not been very motivated in school. For each one of them, their teachers in preschool said, you know what? Don't put them into first grade yet. Let them be in preschool another year. They just want to play. Mm-hmm. And in fact, when my middle son, he got tested to go into kindergarten, I was saying, you know, I really don't think he's ready. And so they said, well, let's test him. So they tested him. He was in the 98th percentile. And they said, what do you think? I mean, what are you thinking? Why would you not send your child? He's very ready. Well, he got into about October of school, and they said, you're right. Mm-hmm. He wasn't ready. He's not motivated. He's bright. But he's not there. He wants to go play.
Mm-hmm.
So even the tests that they give him don't even
right.
give us a signal to what the child really needs. And I think parents really need to kind of trust a lot of their own instincts
right.
to try and raise their children. And I think not just their own instincts, but as we've said in the past, and I think really keep bringing this point home, is according to what is most loving for that child, not according to what's most comfortable for me. I need to look primarily at the child and who they are. I need to form my parenting around that particular individual, and I need to be careful that I'm not just meeting my needs or avoiding my fears in raising this child and calling it love when it really is not that at all.
Yeah, and I would add, make sure that I'm pursuing the goal that God has for my child, not the goal that I have for my child, in making those decisions.
And what's that look like, Jack? Let's put that down to some real practical.
Well, my goal, of course, could be that they glorify me somehow, that they excel at something so that I can look good. God's goal is that they become a wise, righteous, godly individual.
And they might in the process be a great soccer player.
Yeah.
And they may not.
But they may not. Yeah.
Right. You know, Jack, I think that, going back to what we were saying a few minutes ago, I think your point is well taken. There's a lot of times when parents ask us specific questions, like somebody asking you, you know, how do you motivate your child scholastically? Well, you don't have a clue, because your children have always been very motivated in that way. And so I think it's really fair to say, I don't have a clue.
Mm-hmm.
And not to act like, I think that's a very humble thing. You could act like you really did a great job. Well, you didn't do a great job.
No, not
they,
at all.
They came out that way.
Right.
That's just the way they came out of the womb. And for you to take credit for that is actually discouraging another parent. And I think that's something we really need to keep in mind. We need to be very real about our parenting, just as we need to be in all of the things in life, because we present this outward appearance as though we've really got it together and it was easy for us to do. A couple of days ago, somebody asked me a parenting question in my counseling office, and I came up with an idea. And this person said, man, I wish my kids had you as a parent. You just really know how to do it well. You are a great parent. And I said, whoa, wait a minute. I am not a great parent. I am sitting in this counseling office, and theoretically I'm coming up with an idea that might be helpful to you. But I want you to know that I have messed up in this area royally. Go ask my kids.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there is something that I can give to people, even if it's only out of my failures. I can give them some more ideas. I think it's important to give information in that way, as ideas, as possibilities, as maybe something they can try on for their child. Give them, because it becomes very difficult, and because as a parent you're being hit with stuff all the time, and after a while you might fall into some patterns that aren't good and not really know how to get out of it. So getting input from other people is very helpful to kind of give us a broader range of ideas to choose from.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where talking to other people can be very, very helpful. People who don't feel the panic and the despair and the frustration and disappointment that you feel, who just have some objectivity on it and can remind you of things that you already know but that you're losing sight of, can be very, very helpful. The one thing that I could do in this conversation with this parent that I mentioned earlier is remind them that scholastic success is really not ultimately a big deal. It's all blown all out of proportion. A lot of people have been have been very mediocre students who have lived very successful lives. A lot of the people who are mediocre students are very, very bright. They're just bored to death. Just the way our style of education doesn't really match their learning style and their personality, and just the whole institution doesn't really fit them. And so they're not the kind of person who just kind of melds into the culture of a school and shines and blossoms there. They're fighting it the whole way. Well, is that a problem? No, not really. They're still learning. They're still becoming educated. They're still gaining the skills that they're going to need to take with them into the rest of their lives. And some of them are going to be millionaires and billionaires, if that matters. And they can be godly, wise people, and not have got a very good grade average. It's really, we have to get some perspective on it, because when you're in the culture tends to exalt the successful within that culture as being a big deal. I mean, this is really an amazing accomplishment. Well, not really. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think I'm a great example of that. I know we're kind of on a little bit of a side path here, but I'd really like to underline this thing about scholastic achievement and pushing our children, or not pushing our children, to do that. I was very pushed to do well in school. And, you know, Jack, I did do really quite well in school most of the time. I didn't learn anything, because it wasn't the way, they didn't teach in a way that helped me to learn. I have learned since then that I have to have hands-on for me to really get it. I can pass a test because I can memorize things. As an example, I'm with about five other people taking this kind of informal course in ham radio. I don't have a clue what it's talking about. I could not have set up a ham radio set or run it any more than a five-year-old, I don't think. But we took a trial test last week, and guess who got most right? I did.
On a written test.
On a written test. Uh-huh. Man, I didn't get them all right, but I was the top of the class. And every test that we've taken, trial test, for the chapters along the way, I'm at the top of the class. I don't have a clue. I don't have a clue. And the other people that are there, they do. They've got the insight and the way, like my husband hasn't read a lot of the chapters, but he just thinks about the questions. He's got some understanding of all the concepts of electricity and whatever else. I don't even know what it is. But he's got it, and so he thinks it through, and he can come up with the answer. I can pass a test. And so, you know, although it said, you know, it looks like scholastically I'm okay, but I don't learn in that way. I'm just motivated by fear of failing. So what I've learned, though, is over time I have to have my hands in the pot. And that kind of learning doesn't get, isn't majored on in our schools. And so if a kid isn't afraid of failing and they're hands-on people, they're not going to look like they're doing very well.
Right.
And it isn't because I was brilliant. It's because I didn't learn in that particular way. And I think this is really an example of, we've got to really understand as best we can, know our children and see what their strengths are. And in this case, how this particular child learns.
And then put that in perspective as we look at the quantitative measure of their success, their grade point average, put that in perspective and be able to say, student, that's who my child is. That's what they do in that kind of environment, in that kind of culture, as they get C's. What does that mean about them? Not much. I know who my child is. I know what their strengths are. I know the places where they are bright and intelligent and capable and talented, all that's there, and the C grade point average doesn't really mean anything with respect to that. It doesn't diminish that at all. And then relax with it. You know, not insist that somehow they change, become someone different, learn to be a person who can succeed at the level of a grade point average. Why? Mm-hmm. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. 2 years after they graduate, no one is going to remember what grade point average they had or even care, except maybe an admission department somewhere. But even there,
And after you get out of college, nobody has ever asked me, ever, right. what my grade point average was. Not even to get my
license. Isn't that a bummer? You know, the opportunity for glory and no one ever cares.
Nobody even asked me for it? Man, actually, we were having a conversation the other day, and my kids don't think I'm very smart. You know, it's like, oh, Mom. Okay, so what, we were talking about graduate school and, you know, what we got, and I was talking about my grade point average. You did, Mom? Really? I can't believe it.
You took
statistics and you passed? Yes, I did. I got an A. You know, of course, we talked about another course, and I said, oh, yeah, that course. I cheated in that one. You know, oh, awful. Okay. But, Jack, you know, as we're saying that, we can't really tell people how to parent in the particulars. There's a couple of things that I want to bring up today that are kind of bugaboos in my own life and that have come up, and I'm pretty certain they might have come up in your life with your kids. And let's talk around them a little bit if we can.
Okay.
One of the things that the kids are really into is being fair.
Hmm.
Now, there was a smile of recognition on your face there.
Yeah.
And you, with having four kids, must have run into that a lot of the time. Also, it's just something that kids go through. They want things to be fair. And it's very difficult with more than one child to communicate to them my understanding of fairness. Let me tell you how I see it. I think fair is great if it's possible, but it's not possible. It's absolutely impossible. Lots of parents, in trying to be fair, make out a system of, okay, if I spend $20 on the birthday for this kid, I'm going to also spend exactly $20 for this kid. If I get this kid a television set for their room, I'm going to give this other child a television set for their room, or something of equal value. Trying to always keep it that way. Do you have some comments on fairness and how maybe you've seen it in your family, or you've seen it misused? Let's see if we can get a discussion going on this.
Well, I hesitate to even speak because there's one of my children who is still very much wrestling with how unfair that child thinks we were, and I don't have any. I'm not even able to reflect on our parenting of that child to even make an assessment of whether there's a legitimate grief that, beef there or not.
You're unable to assess that because you're too close to it.
Probably. I just need more time and more distance and more dialogue.
But this child, you can tell this child, by the way, that I brought this up, and you'd had no idea I was going to say it. So,
right.
Yeah. But what you're saying is perhaps this child would say that you had given more to the other children than to this one.
I don't know if it's given more, but treated with more justice. Yeah, I mean, there's really two issues. One is how much you give to your children. The other one is how is just your attitude and your, you know, to what extent do you correct? Do you punish? Do you put restrictions on? That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And a child can feel like they were much, much more severely and harshly criticized or blamed or whatever than the other children were. And both of those can be a problem. You know, what I would like to say is because our children are different, and because we do and should and are going to treat them differently, treat each child differently, according to how they react and how they respond and what their own weaknesses are and so on, of course we're going to treat them differently. And there are certain behaviors that in the culture of a home are much more obviously and immediately harmful or destructive. For example, to be physically violent is something that has to be stopped. Well, what about being verbally manipulative? In the eyes of God, they're equally evil. They're equally sinful. But as a parent managing a household, am I not going to be more quick to stop the physical violence than the verbal manipulation? I think so. And wouldn't I be right?
It's easier to see.
It's easier to see, absolutely. I mean, it's just sitting there right in front of you, whereas the other is much more subtle, much more insidious, and and can pass by unnoticed. So am I going to step in and stop the physical violence quickly and with dispatch? Yes. Am I going to do the same thing with respect to the various verbal manipulations that are going on in the family household? Probably not. I probably won't even notice it. So there's all kinds of differences that the behavior of the child itself, himself or herself, are going to create a different response from the parent. And is the parent always doing it right? Of course not. You know, is the parent always attentive enough? Of course not. Is the parent wise enough to know how to respond rightly? No, of course not. But I'm not sure that it's unfair, out of unfairness, that the parent is necessarily acting. It's just out of they're trying to bumble their way through being a parent and not doing it very successfully. In my mind, real unfairness would be, do I or do I not have an equal regard for my child and my child's well-being? Not how do I behave toward them, but is my behavior motivated by an equal regard for them? If it isn't, then that's really unfair, and unfair in the ultimate sense. But
it's
if
wrong.
My behavior, it's wrong, yeah. But if my behavior is different, I'm not sure that I should be so quick to judge it as unfair.
And I think we need to be open to the information that our children are giving us.
Mm-hmm.
This child that's giving you this information may have something that you need to hear.
Right.
And at least the child needs to be heard, that's the way they experience life. If the children are not heard, they have to talk louder. They might talk louder in lots of different ways, maybe verbally. They might talk louder in terms of acting out in another way because they're not being heard. So I think that's just a really huge principle that we need to follow as parents, is to be willing to hear our children, to be willing to be taught by them, to be willing to let them know what they're saying is important to us. Not necessarily that we agree. We might many times not agree, not go with them there, but we can at least come alongside them in terms of letting them know that their words are valuable to us. If people can't use their voice, if they can't say it with their words, they're going to say it a different way. That's, I think, a very, very important principle for parents to get. We want to squelch what they say because it might be uncomfortable to us in some way. They need to say it nonetheless. They need to learn to say respectfully, and as they get older, they can be socialized into being able to say it more kindly. But even as small children might not be able to say it well at all, but I think we need to keep in mind that at least using their words is far more positive than acting out in a way that's kind of around it.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense?
Yeah, it does.
Okay, and so let me go back to fair for a minute. I really like what you said. We need to have fairness in terms of our equal regard for our children. The problem is our children may not experience it in that way. And that's when they come back and they need to talk to us about it. I think parents really go amiss when they're trying to always be fair to each child. I think in the example that I gave, if I give $20 to one, I've got to give $20 to the other.
Fair by equal treatment, equal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not possible to do that. You're going to be, chasing your tail all the time trying to do that. It isn't that, when I give out lunch money to my children, I don't necessarily give out the same. In high school, lunches cost, $3.50, and in junior high they cost $2.50. So I'm gonna give different lunch money. My kids will say that's not fair. Well, okay, it's not the same, but I'm giving them equal regard. I'm giving them an amount of money that will give them a good lunch. But kids want all the same thing, and I think as parents we're very pressed to want to give that to them all the time. Issue that comes up a lot is, you probably experienced this a long time ago, is all the kids want to be in the front seat. And so there's this running to get into the front seat. And so that becomes a real problem for parents. And one of the things that I've done is actually try to be fair in that situation and try to rotate it. But I can't always know and I can't always remember. And so what I say to my children is, I'm going to try my hardest, but it's not always going to be right. Now with airbags, my smallest one really shouldn't be in the front seat. So she's always having to be in the back seat. what she tells me is that's not fair. Well, what I'm valuing is not fairness as much as her well-being. And so there's a lot of factors that come into this. And I think to early on try to get children to understand, I'm going to try to do what's right, but it may not always be equal for everybody. It won't be equal for everybody. And this might sound petty to those of you who aren't children, don't have children, but boy, this is a real issue.
It's a very important issue. And I think what we parents have to keep in mind is that that's where the sinfulness of our children really, really kicks in and wreaks havoc, because they're going to be inclined in their sinfulness to construe things as unfair that aren't really unfair. I mean, that like the airbag sort of example. You're not trying to be unequal in your treatment, and it's certainly not out of unequal regard for your daughter, but it's just the circumstances of life are such that it can't be the same. And for her and her brothers, it just can't be the same and have it be equal regard. If the tables were turned, you would respond in exactly the same way, putting her in the front and the boys in the back. But the tables are not turned, and that's not you, that's the circumstances. But the sinfulness in our children are always seeking to get what they want, not what's really ultimately fair. They just want what they want, and they know that they can get to a parent very effectively by charging us with not loving them as much as I should love them. I mean, that just destroys us when we think that that's what they're perceiving, and we are very susceptible to being manipulated like that.
And that brings me to the next point that I wanted to bring up, is that susceptibility that we have. It is so hard to maintain our bearings when I am forever thinking, was I fair?
Mm-hmm.
Did I love them?
Mm-hmm.
Because they can be so, so convincing. I've gotten to the point sometimes where I always want to witness.
Exactly.
Okay, I turned to my daughter tells me I didn't say something. I turned to my son and I said, did I say that? Didn't I say that? Yes, Mom, you said that. I heard you say it. Oh, good. Okay, I said it. You find yourself doing
yes,
that?
Uh-huh.
They are just incredibly good, and all children are good at this, at trying to manipulate their parents to get what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And what I find is that I'm really worn down. I've been a parent now for 18 years, an 18-year-old, a 15-year-old, an 11-year-old, and your oldest is 23?
22, I think, yeah.
You can't remember, but
no.
it adds up, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
And the bearings that I used to be able to have when my child was young are very different than now. I'm wiser now, but I'm also more run down.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really tired. And I don't keep track of things as well.
Yeah, and that's there's all kinds of other things that change. That, you know, my older children have a tendency to compare what they got when they were our younger children's age. Well, our younger children are getting a whole lot more than they got, because economically we're better off than we were then. We're more tired. That's an excellent point. I mean, we're just, and partly we're more relaxed with the process. I mean, we were really uptight with our first child,
right,
and our older children, trying to do it right. And partly we're tired, but partly we've realized I can't do it right. And so we're a little bit more relaxed. And that translates into different behavior toward our children. All those things change. Life is dynamic. And so from our older children to compare what they got with what our younger children are getting is like comparing apples and oranges. And yet they insist on, I mean, they don't insist, they often have the maturity to figure this out themselves, but the temptation in them is to insist on it being the same. And that's where measuring fairness by equal treatment is so unrealistic, because life changes. I mean, just to take a dramatic example, imagine some Albanian family from Kosovo, the older child or the younger child comparing what they have today with what their older siblings got. Well, there was a huge catastrophe in their life that changed their life radically and forever. Is that their parents' fault? Of course not. And that's a very obvious example. But little minor catastrophes are happening in every family all the time. As the world goes on, my situation and my circumstances change, and I as a parent have no control over that. And my children cannot rightfully blame me for the world changing and for my circumstances being different.
And just getting older.
And just getting older.
Getting older, getting wiser, getting more tired.
Right.
All of the above. Something that our kids, and we've hit upon this also a little bit, but what we need to keep in mind is our kids, like us, have an egocentric perception of the world. We really want for ourselves the most. And we see life through those lenses of wanting for ourselves. And I'm thinking of a couple of things come out of that. One is this wanting things to be fair. Another is I really don't see my parents' efforts toward me in the same way I see my parents' efforts towards another child. It looks to our children very often like they're getting less. Like, and I think in particular when I'm trying to deal with the kids and they're fighting with one another, for example, forever each of my children will say, "But you never told my brother, but you never told my sister. How come I always get in trouble? How come he never gets in trouble?" And I'm always saying, I am talking to that person. I did talk to that person. I am doing this. I am doing that. But they just don't see it.
Yeah, they don't perceive it.
They simply don't. And I think as parents, we need to go into it. It's very helpful to know our kids aren't going to get it. And we have to kind of try and maintain our bearings, not through their perceptions, but through our more wise perceptions. Not that we shouldn't be taught by them, but we really need to hang on to, wait a minute, I can think kind of clearly, and I am making an effort here that they cannot see. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
You run into that one?
Yes, yeah. Anything that we do of a nurturing nature, they tend to take for granted. And don't really, it doesn't register in their memory. It doesn't register in their catalog of in the scorekeeping that they do. It doesn't really make a dent. But when they see us do a comparable thing for another child, that registers in their scorecard. And if they are punished, that registers in their scorecard. But they don't remember the fact that their sibling got in trouble just last week. And even if you bring it up and remind them, they go, "Yeah, that's right, but that was unusual, but that was rare. I mean, you're always picking on me. Only rarely do you punish your siblings." Well,
that is such a universal, and I would like to yell out over the airwaves. That is such a universal that kids say, "I'm always in trouble, but so and so isn't." And you know, they could be right in some circumstances. Mm-hmm. That's true. But I think that's just a ploy that children get together and they say, "Okay, let's do this to our parents." You know? So you're always kind of running in circles. And I think I guess I mentioned this before, but another thing that kids do out of their selfishness is I really think they try and wear us down. I've even had one of my kids say to me, "Yeah, Mom, I know that if I just keep at it and keep at it and keep at it, eventually you're just going to get tired or you're going to lose perspective and I might get my way." So they want their way. They're egocentric, selfish people, just like I am, mm-hmm. in part of their being. And they're going to really, really wear us down. And you know, Jack, I feel worn down.
Mm-hmm.
I have the battle scars of parenthood. And it is very much tougher to be a parent at this point in my life just because of the constant energy, daily energy that it takes to be a parent is really takes a toll on me.
Yeah.
You experience that?
Yeah, yeah. And I probably my wife even more than I. Because they're attacking us at a level where we're really vulnerable. I mean, what they're wearing away at is my sense of emotional and psychological fulfillment. I mean, they're saying you're not the very thing that you want to do. You're not doing, and they're just constantly sending that message to us. You're not doing it right.
You're not loving me. You're not loving me. You're not loving me.
Exactly.
And you're not giving me what I should have. You're not being fair. You're not. You know. Yeah, they're hitting at that all the time.
Yeah.
And it in some ways it makes me really doubt myself. In other ways, I just kind of get harder.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I just have to just kind of stand my ground and say, wait a minute, that's true. And other times I get a witness. I mean, really, literally. Okay. Okay, husband, come here, Larry. Come in here and sit with me while I'm talking so that we can have, you know, some clarity.
One of the things that I think we need to do in the and I don't think I've done a very good job of this, but it just seems to make sense that what we would try to do is to help my children come to terms with their own selfishness in an appropriate way, to remind them that they're ultimately the beef that they have to have with respect to the disadvantages of their life or the superior advantages of their siblings, if they perceive it that way. To whatever extent their perception is true, the one you need to take it up with ultimately is God. God is the one who's making your life not equal and not fair. So what are you going to do about that? And that, you know, how they deal with that is really a kind of a watershed issue in their life. It's really a decisive issue. They're either going to destroy their life with bitterness and resentment because their life didn't go the way they wanted it to go, or they're going to become truly wise people as they recognize God didn't owe them anything, they were not entitled to anything, and anything they have is by the mercy and grace of God. And that's ultimately where all of us need to get to. And one of the places, one of the first arenas where people are going to learn that is when they look at the parenting that they've received and decide what are they going to do about the fact that God gave them those parents in that situation, in those circumstances, with those things that happened in their life that led them to be treated the particular way that they were. What are they going to do about that?
And that's a topic that I want to bring up actually in another show is, as adults, what are we going to do with the parenting that we had?
Right.
How are we going to work with that? And I'd kind of like to save that.
Okay.
Another thing I'd like to talk about is, as adults, and what can we do now as parents of adult children who maybe we can look back and say that we've blown it? Where do we go with that? I think those two things I would like to save for another show. See, you thought we weren't going to have enough for this show, but I have it saved up for even more. But
okay.
Those two things are really important. So I'm going to leave that for a minute. So I really like that point. Is that okay with you?
Sure, yeah.
Okay. What I'd like to talk about a little bit is the fighting between children. That's another thing that kind of is, they do from an egocentric perspective to try to get their own way, and it really wears us down. A couple of comments that I'd like to make about it. On one hand, I truly and honestly hate it. If I never heard my kids fight again in their lives, it would be too soon. It would just, it's a big deal in my life. It's a big deal in every single family on the face of this earth. And if you don't believe me, then I hope that God just like lets us all be flies on the wall to each other's houses and see the reality of our lives. Because that's just true in every family. If children are not fighting among each other, What's going on is it's going on underneath, because we all are to some extent egocentric people who want our own way. If the parents don't let it come out to the surface in the form of verbally talking to each other, then it's going to come out in other ways. Maybe not physically, but something that's passive aggressive, something that's an undercurrent, something that we are undercutting the other child in another way. It just is going to happen. We need to know how to deal with it. Primarily, I think we shouldn't let it go underneath, underwater. I think the kids should be able to have voice to talk about what's going on. I remember listening to a relative of mine say to her children, "No fighting. You cannot fight." Well, the kids really hated each other, but they were never allowed to say it out loud. And I think that's a huge mistake. The kids need to learn how to work with each other, how to talk about things, how to work it through, and they're going to do it poorly. They need some training. I have found, and I almost hate to say this, but I have found that through my kids fighting is the way that I've taught them about God more than anything else in their lives. Because the way I deal with fighting is, they'll both come in and they'll want me to listen to take their side and listen to how the other guy was so mean to them. And what I say to them now, and for many years now, is I don't want to hear what the other guy did. I want you both to come in here. I want you to sit down. We're going to talk about this. And I want you to tell me what you did that was wrong. You give me your part. Well, I didn't do anything. Well, so-and-so. You know, nope. I don't want to hear what they did. They'll tell me what they did in a minute. But I want you to tell me what you did to contribute to this problem. And so I have them both sit in the same room and tell me what they did to contribute to the problem and not be able to complain about the other guy. The whole story ends up coming out. You know, and obviously this is not perfect. It's very messy. I boggle through it. Don't think this is smooth. It isn't. But ultimately, what I'm trying to teach my children is you have a responsibility for what happened here. And I don't want them just to look at the other guy and what the other guy did wrong, because that's where their view ends, if that's what happens. My children have gotten through this, I think, an understanding of their own need for God. Because they just, if they're telling on themselves, they just cannot get away from seeing that they really blew it. And when I talked to them about why the cross, I was driving down the street the other day and my daughter said, "Why the cross?" And I said, "Well, remember what you did to your brother the other day?" "Oh, yeah." "Well, that's why the cross, because Jesus wants to take the consequences for your disobedience and for your hurtfulness." Oh, they got it. They're able to take on the responsibility for their own hurtfulness and to see it in a context where they get disciplined for it, but they don't get shamed for it. And that's really a big, huge difference. To give them consequences for what they did, and to be very strong about giving consequences, and yet to love them anyway. To be in a context with them of trying to understand this, trying to see it. So I have used that over and over and over again as really kind of a parenting technique to help them understand who they are and who God is. And so the fighting really has worked to our benefit. But it really takes a commitment on my part. It is much easier to just say, "Stop. Darn it, just stop.
You're making my life inconvenient.
You're making my life miserable."
Yeah.
So just stop. And there are times, I have to say, that I do that. It's just, I'm at my end, or it's just appropriate to say that for whatever reason. But the far bigger emphasis that I have is, how can I help my kids learn through this? Another thing in fighting is I need to understand that the behavior that the children have always has a purpose. It may not work to their, it might not be a moral way to do something. It might not have integrity, but it's got a message behind it. And so instead of just telling my children, so I'm going from fighting to, I changed subjects and didn't tell you, fighting to doing something that's inappropriate or wrong, or that's a very much another teaching tool that I use, to not just tell them to stop. Well, that's how I changed it, because I was talking about stopping. Thinking, how did I get here? But instead of just telling my children to stop whatever behavior they have, I think it's very important to also say or understand, what is the purpose of that behavior? What are they trying to say? What is the need they're expressing? So, for example, if a child whines a lot, what's that whining about? Could it be giving me some kind of information that I need to work at deciphering? It's much easier for me to not decipher and just get them to stop. But I think I lose a lot of the learning of who my child is, and they also lose the opportunity to see what's going on with them. And I, as a parent, I think really need to take on looking at what's really going on and help them see.
One of the things you said that I really like is the freedom that you give yourself to not do that every time.
Or going back to the fighting?
Well, yeah, and I imagine there are times when you just say, "Stop whining," too.
Yeah.
Because as important as those lessons are, I mean, just life is just so full.
It's so full.
That doing it right every time would be itself a full-time job that is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That there are some times where I just have to say later, but right now, stop. I can't take it right now. I'm just. There's no virtue in me that you stop. You just, if you want to live with me right now in the state that I'm in, you're just going to have to stop. And to give ourselves the freedom to do that, Not that we're right in doing that, not that it's somehow noble, not that it's somehow wise, but it's just a necessity of life. And to be able to be relaxed enough to allow ourselves to pick and choose our times.
And in that regard, sometimes for the stop, what I'll say is, I just need you to go be in your rooms for a while so I can get space for myself, because I'm not in a place I can deal with it. I'm ready to pounce on them, and I know that. And so I ask them to give me space by going in their rooms or whatever it takes for me to be able in a place that I can consider it. Because really, it works so hard on me sometimes that I just feel very impatient, and I know it's wrong for me to respond to them from that place of impatience.
So
I do it really perfectly. I do it imperfectly. I do it really poorly, but I keep on having these things as kind of general guidelines that I have worked hard at sticking with and training my kids with. And they're just kind of things that I've picked up that are uniquely helpful to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to bring up a third one, and that's that whenever I give my child a consequence, or not whenever, but very often, I try to help them know that it's their choice. The choices they made led to this consequence. It isn't just because I am this big person out of the blue that's giving this to them or doing something to them, but because of their choices, there's consequences. There's always consequences to our choices, and I think that's such an important thing for us to hold on to be able to connect our behavior with what comes after it. And a disconnect between those things really puts us as adults into really difficult positions very often. I see that going on with people all the time. So what happens, though, with that is my children will say to me now, you never get a consequence. How come you don't have to lose your allowance? Or how come you don't have to work an extra hour? How come you don't, you know? And that's a really tough thing. It's not fair, again, in their minds. And that's a tough one to get at. So I think my point here is, yeah, they're always going to come up with trying to undermine the work that we're doing and trying to teach them. It will never be perfect. But keeping in mind some of those principles that from their choices, there are always consequences. When the children fight, that I want to help them see their contribution to the problem and take responsibility for that. And that all behavior really has a purpose. And I don't use that to excuse their behavior, but to understand them a whole lot better. Those are things I really, really try and keep in mind in my parenting. I want to go to a fourth one really quickly, and what a dilemma that a lot of parents come to is when my child has done something wrong, like when they've been in a fight or when they've broken a rule, should they then say, I'm sorry? And I have really balked at that. What I want my children to know is that they have contributed, that they have been wrong in some way, that they take responsibility for that, and I will offer to them, if you feel bad about it, if you feel sorry for it, or if it seems to you that you want forgiveness or you should offer forgiveness, then I want you to consider that in this situation. I really want you to think about that. But I will not say to them, you have to go tell Johnny that you're sorry. Because I think that's just helping them become little critters who are doing the right thing, but it isn't at all coming from an understanding or from their heart.
Yeah, we're almost out of time, but if I could just add really quickly that one thing that's been really helpful to me is that this is going back to something you said earlier. One thing that's been really helpful to me is recognizing that as much as my children may complain about my discipline, oftentimes what they really believe about it is different than what they're articulating to me. They may very much appreciate what I'm doing the whole time they're complaining about it. And I need to recognize that that's a possibility and a reality, that they want boundaries, they want training, they want to know what virtue is, and at some level they really are appreciative, but I'm not going to hear thank you for disciplining me.
Absolutely
and,
not.
And I
think at the level where they're appreciative is it makes them feel secure.
Yeah.
And that's maybe on a more gut level, intuitive level. If my parent can draw a boundary for me and I can't knock him down, then I have a lot greater security in my parents' commitment to me.
Yeah.
That's the message we give them.
Can you imagine taking head-on the greatest thinkers of Western civilization? Sounds daunting, doesn't it? But that's just what they do at Gutenberg College. Working closely with their teachers, students at Gutenberg read and discuss the great books of our history. You may justly ask, why? Can such an education guarantee one a good job? At Gutenberg College, they believe one's college education should first and foremost be a doorway to a good life. The question is, what is a good life? The Gutenberg staff believes a good life begins with the pursuit of wisdom rather than mere knowledge. At Gutenberg, the student's character is as important as the student's intellectual growth. Gutenberg isn't for everyone, but if you are interested in reading and discussing the greatest thinkers, philosophers, poets, and theologians of Western civilization, if you're interested in working personally with your teachers, and if you want to open the doorway to a good life, ask about Gutenberg College. Most of the Gutenberg staff also teach at McKenzie Study Center. The Study Center ministry is founded on the belief that a clear understanding of God's Word is not merely an intellectual exercise, but rather the truth of the Bible is a radical message for every human being. At McKenzie, you can find classes, seminars, conferences, counseling, tapes, and articles all focused toward knowing and applying God's Word to our everyday experiences. Information will be given at the end of the program on how you can contact Gutenberg College or McKenzie Study Center.
So listeners, again, we're at the end of our hour. I hope that what we've said today has been helpful to you. It certainly is interesting for Jack and I to be talking with each other each week, and certainly for myself, I discover things about myself and in myself and about God every time that we meet, and it's a really incredible opportunity for Jack and I, and I think from the response that we get from you guys, actually quite an opportunity for you to learn in new ways, new things. And to continue this program, we need to ask you again to support us. Sometimes when I've been asked for financial support from various ministries, I'm pretty overwhelmed because I hear of their huge budgets, and it just seems like if I send in just a little bit of money, it won't make any difference anyway. And quite honestly, there's been times that I haven't sent in any money because it just feels like it's too big of a burden. So what I ask of one of our board members was, how much does it cost per week for us to run this program? What are our actual expenses? And the quote that I got back was, for each week, we're on 8 stations, and our cost is $1,000. So what that means is that if 100 people gave only $10 each week, then that would support us. And that's really a pretty manageable figure. If 50 people gave $20, then that would support our program for an entire week. It really isn't that much money. And I think it's kind of doable if we think about it in those terms. So if you've been considering giving but feel like, oh, I just don't really have much to give, please give anyway, even if it's a small amount.
You have been listening to Christianity at Work, a radio ministry of McKenzie Study Center. If you would like a free copy of this program, or would like to know more about McKenzie Study Center or Gutenberg College, you may call us at area code 541-485-4801. You can write to us at 1883 University Street, Eugene, Oregon, 97403. And we're also on the Internet. Look for us under McKenzie Study Center or Gutenberg College. Tapes can be purchased with check or Visa. If you didn't have time to write all that down, I'll repeat it again in just a moment. The McKenzie staff has worked for years studying the Bible, understanding the world we live in, and pursuing what it means to be a Christian. They desire that their ministry may be valuable to others, but they also know that their efforts are in deep need of God's mercy. You can join the McKenzie staff in their ministry through their classes, seminars, tapes, and papers. The McKenzie Study Center is a nonprofit ministry entirely funded by the generous contributions of people who believe in its goals and have benefited from its ministry. If you would like to make a gift to McKenzie, it will be entirely tax deductible. Just mail your check to McKenzie Study Center, 1883 University Street, Eugene, Oregon, 97403. If you would like to request a free taped copy of today's program, the telephone number is 541-485-4801. Now, on behalf of Dr. Jack Crabtree, Christine Barber, and the other staff of McKenzie Study Center, thank you for listening.